So one of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this over the Gonderdyland Rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
Got a podcast.
Well,
not too many people do. Here's another one. Let's chew it out the factory and see what happens when we could be praising Jesus.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're going to stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
You know, we all have the same words at our disposal, a dictionary full of them, but it takes a poet to spin them into gold.
See, I'm into odd evenings. So they say my poetry is missing a koofy like a rapper without ice. They say it's uncommon. I say, nah, that's very common in Taleb. And they say, but you like the Jay-Z of spoken word? And I say, no, I'm more like the Razkaz of Pharaoh Munch. Lyricism is a religion, and so I already have everything that I want. And they keep looking for my material possessions while I possess them with thoughts that haunt. And why would I need to see Jacob when I can bake up a cake of ideas to flaunt? And all he's got is those rocks, and so I'd rather be me. Because soon he won't be able to keep your attention unless he's got rims with spinning TVs. And they told him if he put ice in his mouth, you won't be able to see me. But it's not about whether you're balling now, player. It's about whether you still be balling in 23-3. So he go crazy and hire an entourage. I stay sane and hire self. That way I get to stay honest. Take the crowd to their higher self. And I own everything that I write, so it don't require higher sales. I'm into odd evenings. Leaving my people believing in the righteousness of our struggling is just as well that I'm cool as hell. So it never sounds stale whenever I tell them I love you. And right now I get to struggle with you. But when this is over for me, I can struggle from above you and still touch you in places you didn't even know existed. I might be gifted with wordplay, but what my words say is surely realistic. And it's not enough for me to get off and have y'all saying that I ripped it. What I'm about is when I leave out, when I put down, leaving you uplifted. Odd evenings, so the power of God is easing through the wires. And I breathe hot breath into this microphone until your soul catch a fire. Then I mix it with bass and trouble till even the ghetto knows the devil's a liar. Like I said, I aspire to inspire till this entire evil empire expires. Higher self is odd evening till everything I'm breathing is pleasing to your innards. And how could I not be upset that you keep feeding y'all Twinkies when I know spoken word got that home-cooked dinner? Plus the biscuits and the gravy while them lazy asses writing nursery rhymes for beginners. We got something for the saints and the sinners. We begin to send them antennas and center. The truth will hit you in your center. Spoken word is the future. Remember where you heard it first. Forget that commercial quota water. This is what you need to pour to quench your thirst. And when I come down off stage, why don't you come up to me and see if I ain't down to earth? Because I know that how you value your time is responsible for every cent that I'm worth. Odd evenings, leaving indelible fingerprints on your heart. That's why we come together in peace with pieces that rip this stage apart. And I hate to see it end, so whenever I begin, I'm thinking, don't make me start, because life is so temporary, so it's only right to give thanks to God for these few odd evenings where we get to share this, the most spiritual art.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Around Lockerbie, Scotland this morning, the search continues for victims of Pan Am Flight 103 and for clues to the apparent high-altitude explosion that rained wreckage and bodies on the hilly countryside. Dan Revive is there.
British crash investigators now working together with American government experts say there's no evidence so far of sabotage, but British sources warn not to expect any conclusive answers until next week at the earliest. Britain's Department of Transport is examining the flight recorders with American help, and here in Lockerbie, pieces of the Boeing 747 jumbo jet are being collected carefully as evidence. Despite official advice, a dozen relatives of the dead passengers have come to Scotland. Perhaps 30 more, including Americans, are on the way. Richard Eason of the U.S. Consulate.
It's up to the local authorities how much they can actually see, whether they can actually go to any of these sites involved, and of course, whether they can actually see any remains, which I doubt.
The bodies are too badly mutilated to be identified, except by dental and medical records and some jewelry. 160 corpses have been found in and around Lockerbie. About 100 haven't been located. Also missing, presumed dead, 17 Lockerbie residents. A general reaction here.
Christmas doesn't mean nothing, no. Nothing.
Dan Revive, CBS News, Lockerbie, Scotland.
The U.S. government knew of a terrorist threat 16 days before Flight 103 went down. It warned State Department employees to avoid Pan Am flights from Frankfurt, but did not tell the public. That news was especially hard on grieving relatives of the more than 275 victims.
What right do they have of taking an airplane up when they know there's a possible terrorist attack?
You know, if they thought something was wrong with that flight, they should have warned everybody, especially all American citizens, all the people taking the flight.
Republican Senator William Cohen of Maine sits on the Intelligence Committee, and he's troubled by the selective terrorist alert.
That's a very disturbing factor, that notice would be given to certain employees and not to the general public. I think that's something that's going to require some examination as to why only certain individuals were notified. I know, for example, that four members of my staff, or the Intelligence Committee staff in the Senate, traveled from Frankfurt to Washington during that same period, and they were not notified, and I must tell you they're quite concerned about it as well.
The initial warning of a bombing came in an anonymous telephone call to the U.S. Embassy in Helsinki and suggested the Abu Nidal terrorist faction would somehow dupe a Finnish woman into unknowingly carrying a bomb on a flight out of Frankfurt. A search is on to see if any Finnish women were aboard Flight 103. Meanwhile, Wyatt Andrews reports the State Department is coping with questions about its failure to issue a general warning.
The U.S. government took the Helsinki threat seriously, but there was no notice given to American travelers because it's U.S. policy not to do that. State Department spokeswoman Phyllis Oakley says U.S. policy is to tell only those embassies, airlines, and police forces which might be able to stop the threat.
Our focus has been on alerting those who are responsible for security arrangements. We want to alert those people who can do something about the threat.
The public is not told, officials say, because there are too many threats. 106 threats, in fact, since September. Spokesman Dan Howard of the Pentagon argues the public would not want to know about each one.
There are so many of them that if you paid attention to all of them and planned your travel accordingly, you would never go anywhere.
Officials even argue that by keeping the warnings behind the scenes, they are fighting terrorism. This argument says that if terrorists know that every serious threat will get publicity, they could shut down the airlines of the world with a phone call. Wyatt Andrews, CBS News, the State Department.
So far, speculation about a terrorist bomb is only that. A British investigator told CBS News this morning the cockpit voice recorder offered no clues except a sound at the very end, which is being further analyzed. Moments ago, President Reagan offered his condolences to victims of the Flight 103, and he was asked about the lack of public warning.
I think all the precautions that could be taken were taken with regard to warning the airline and all, but if you stop to think about it, such a public statement with nothing more to go on than an anonymous telephone call, you'd literally have closed down the air traffic in the world.
6 miles from the Lockerbie crash site, two teenagers inspecting some wreckage found a brown envelope. Inside, $547,000 in traveler's checks.
All my bags are packed. I'm ready to go, I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blown his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go. There's so many times I've let you down. So many times I've played around. I tell you now, they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I'll think of you. Every song I sing, I'll sing for you. When I come back, I'll bring your wedding ring. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go.
A major search and rescue operation has been launched after an Air Asia plane travelling from Surabaya to Singapore lost contact with air traffic control. Flight QZ8501 had been due to arrive in Singapore at 8:30 a.m. local time, but lost contact with the Jakarta Air Traffic Control Tower at 6:17 a.m. A total of 162 people were on board, with the majority being Indonesian, but it's also been confirmed that one Briton was on the plane. The Airbus 320-200 went missing after the pilots asked to change course to avoid bad weather during the flight. The aircraft had been flying at 32,000 feet and had asked to fly at 38,000 to avoid clouds. The Transport Ministry said no distress signal was sent prior to the disappearance. Relatives of the passengers on board the missing plane have been gathering at Juanda Airport in Surabaya, hoping for a miracle. Family members waited anxiously as they scrolled through the list of passengers on board the flight. The Air Asia Group has not had a crash since its operations began in 2002, but this latest incident comes less than 10 months after Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 went missing on its way to Beijing and has yet to be found.
Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Then close your eyes and I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come, when I won't have to leave alone. About the times I won't have to say. Kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go. Hate to go.
Russian investigators claim they have evidence that a Ukrainian fighter jet brought down Malaysian flight MH17, killing the 298 people on board. And they are willing to share it with the International Committee looking into the tragedy. An alleged whistleblower approached the Russian media with the claims. Our correspondent Murad Gazdiev joins us now with more details. Murad, this new evidence that was supposedly has broken through, what can you tell us about it?
Well, investigators taking these alleged revelations very, very seriously. They've now met with this source, this man, and he took a polygraph test, a lie detector test, which they say he passed without any problems. They say his story is solid, that he wasn't confused about any of the details. What's more, it meshes with the facts that the Russian investigators already have about Ukraine's role in the downing of MH17.
Now, of course, if this turns out to be true, this would be sensational news. What exactly did this man have to tell the media?
Well, apparently this source served at an airfield in eastern Ukraine from which Ukrainian military jets launched airstrikes against the dissident East. And on the 17th of July, the day that MH17 went down, he says he witnessed a Su-25 fighter jet belonging to the Ukrainian Air Force take off with anti-air missiles equipped. When it came back from its mission, apparently those missiles were no longer there, presumably having been launched. And the pilot, a certain Captain Voloshin, when he got out of the aircraft, he was apparently visibly shaken. And here's what he had to say.
Фраза была от него слышна, когда из самолета вылез. Самолет не тот. И вечером, вечерняя фраза была. Вопрос у одного летчика к нему, к этому же. Что там с самолетом? На что тот ответил, самолет оказался в ненужное время, в ненужном месте.
The Ukrainian government has confirmed that there is a Captain Voloshin in its air force, but it maintains that on the 17th of July, on that day, none of its aircraft were flying any missions. As for the source, this alleged witness, his identity for now is being protected because he still has family in Ukraine.
Хочу ще я слякать весною чорною. Горить февраль, да стать чернили плакать, писать о феврале на взрыв. Пока грохочу ще я слякать весною чорною.
Why don't you arrange separate flights for terrorists, so if they is gonna do this terrible behavior, let them ruin their own trip?
Kick it! You don't understand.
Horror fans are looking forward to the video game The Evil Within, which hits shelves this week. Our own Chad Williams got a chance to look at the game and says it's absolutely terrifying if you're a huge wuss who has never experienced real fear.
The Evil Within is a game about a police officer trapped in a nightmarish abandoned asylum. Chris Hennigan from Bethesda gave us a sneak peek of the game and tried to convince me, an adult man, to be scared of a bunch of made-up images on a TV screen.
The Evil Within is absolutely terrifying. You're never safe and have to think on your feet to avoid being killed.
Oh my god, so the monsters are gonna come out of the TV and kill me?
No, they stay in the TV.
I have to think on my feet or the monsters will... what? Take all the money out of my daughter's college funds?
No.
Because that's what scares me. How am I gonna pay for all that? Can you tell me that?
I can't.
Is there a part where the player confronts the horrors of getting older?
No.
The game is full of pretend monsters that scream at you. But unlike when your wife screams at you, you don't end up sleeping in a hotel for a month. Here's a gameplay tip. When the blood ghosts chase you, turn off the TV and the monsters go away. Chris told me how the game keeps the suspense high.
You do have guns, but often they can't do more than slow the enemy down. For most of the game, you're totally trapped.
Sort of like my house. I have two mortgages, and I look at the place, and I start panicking, and I'm like, who am I? Is this what I really wanted? You want a home?
I don't.
As I walked all around this virtual haunted house, I was sweating the whole time because I'm pretty sure my son is autistic, and I have no clue how to deal with that. The chainsaw-wielding demons of the Evil Within proved a calming respite from the unyielding terror of normal life. I highly recommend The Evil Within for any horror fan that has no real problems and is frightened by make-believe. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Chad. I once fought in a war, so I find the idea of paying to be scared shameful. Next up, Apple introduces its first 15-foot-long communal iPad.
Kick it! You don't understand. I ain't scared.
scared of you motherfucker.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
When you give homeless people money, do you ever wonder how they spent it? Today I'm gonna give a homeless guy $100, and I'm gonna follow him and see how he spent it. Hey!
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm alright.
I'm Josh.
I'm Thomas.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I just tried to make him up to give me something to eat.
I just wanna, like, give it back to people.
Yeah.
Not gonna be that much, but...
Hey, anything's appreciated. Oh, goodness.
It's just $100 here.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, just keep it. It's your money now.
Oh, that's...
Just want, you know...
No, really, are you sure?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead, it's yours.
I'm starting to tear up.
No,
over
it's
that.
Okay.
That's, like, incredible.
It's okay, it's all right.
I've never... Can I?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
I've never had... this in my life.
Nice meeting you. I hope you can, you know, have a good use of that money.
It will be, sir.
Okay, great. See ya. Yeah, just keep filming. Just make sure he didn't see you. Alright, he just came out. What'd he get? Alright, let's go across the street. Let's go, go, go. Let's go. Go follow him.
Giving them food.
I'm gonna talk to him.
You want some potato chips?
Oh, because those are too hot for her.
Thank you.
Oh, hey. Hey, what are you doing here?
Hey, actually, come here. I need to talk to you.
Happy holidays, you guys.
Thank you.
I was following you the entire time.
Oh, yeah?
After I give you the money, we were. There's a camera. My camera is right there. You see the camera?
Oh, yeah.
Do you even know them? Like.
No.
I feel like I owe you apologies because I. You went to a liquor store, right? Earlier?
Oh, you thought I was going to get all smacked up drunk, huh?
I thought you were going to buy, like, alcohol or something.
Yeah, but there's things money can't buy, and my own, I get a happiness out of what I'm doing. No.
Here.
I'm fine.
No, you just touched my heart. You know, this is not $100.
No, this is... What,
I want you to keep it.
I'm stunned.
I'm stunned by.
I don't know what to say. Usually, I'm pretty talkative.
How you end up to, you know, like where you're at right now?
Basically, I was living with my parents, and my stepdad had cancer, and they were getting hospice, but it didn't cover. The insurance only pays so much. I quit working because I had to be available, and so he passed away, and then 2 weeks later, my mother passed away from kidney failure. The building they're in is being sold, the condo. And I all of a sudden found myself homeless. That's been like 4 months now. And there's a lot of people that are just victim of circumstance. And they didn't go homeless because they're late. You know what I mean?
Lazy or like drug addiction.
It could be a divorce. And one thing leads to another. And the man sells his boat, his home, everything. And all of a sudden he finds out he's got no money. And he's, you know, there's a lot of good people that are homeless. If you're doing good, you somehow be on a seam and you meet, bump into good people. That's all there is to it. You're on a different path somehow in life. I can't explain it. Good seeing you again.
I can't believe that just happened.
Just what he feels. Keeps a letter in the pocket of his coat, but he never breaks a seal. Set up in a barroom corner, play for tips and beer. People carrying on and drinking, and you got a strain to hear. Some old cheap guitar, but he can play on pots and pans. You never heard a soul so pure and true, it's flowing right out of his hands. And you can sing sweet as a choir girl, you can sing a house on fire. You seen him calling up the angel, a breeze for the telephone wire. And if you ask him how he sings his blues song, well, he said, I got a soul that I won't sell. I got a soul that I won't sell. I got a soul that I won't sell. And I don't read postcards from hell.
Internet introduces everybody, no matter how weird, no matter how marginalized, no matter how peculiar, to the fact that there are others like you. There are others like you. Find the others. Make common cause. Realize that it's the deals you cut and the friends you make that determine where you're going to be standing when the flash hits.
Hi, everyone. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with that famous quotation, The pen is mightier than the sword. But did you know that the earliest known version of that phrase, the word is mightier than the sword, dates back to the 7th century BC? For thousands of years, humans have understood that it is ideas worth spreading that change the world, not swords or guns or bombs. This is the story of how I came to discover one such idea worth spreading, and that story starts in a most unlikely place. Here. A rundown old apartment building in rural Japan. I moved into this building in 2006. My apartment was the one on the bottom, second from the right, the one with the bamboo blinds. It's not exactly the Hilton, but it was home for me. And the apartment came with an added bonus, a free internet connection. And that little bit of fiber optic cable changed my life. It didn't take much YouTube watching or archive.org browsing to realize that I could watch anything I wanted at any time. I could listen to any radio broadcast from any radio station that broadcasted online. I could read any newspaper that had a website. The world was literally at my fingertips. And so I watched The Century of the Self, and I discovered how Edward Bernays broke the taboo on women smoking for the American Tobacco Company. I logged onto the National Security Archive of the George Washington University and downloaded the declassified Operation Northwoods documents detailing how the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff planned to commit terror attacks in Washington, D.C. and blame them on the Cubans in order to justify an invasion of that country. I listened to lectures by G. Edward Griffin about the founding of the Federal Reserve in a secret meeting on Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia in 1910. In short, my mind was blown. Here I was discovering all this crazy, incredible information from primary source documents and original interviews with important people. But there was a problem. Why had I never heard this before? Why had I never read about any of this in the newspaper or heard it on talk radio or seen it on TV? Well, what was I going to do? Just a lowly English teacher living in rural Japan, what could I even do with this information? In order to understand and answer those questions, we have to come back to this, the pen. What is the pen? It's a communication technology. It's pretty crude. It's been around for thousands of years, but it marks a turning point in human history. With the pen, people could communicate over vast distances and vast stretches of time. Because of the pen, we can read the words of poets and philosophers and historians who have been dead for thousands of years. But as a communication technology, it has its limitations. If with a pen you have to copy out manuscripts by hand, which is a laborious and painstaking process. And that's even if you can read and write, because for much of history, most people didn't have the time or money or leisure to be able to learn to read or write, so that was left to the monks and scholars. But by 1439, Johannes Gutenberg came up with an improvement to that technology, the movable type printing press. Now, people didn't have to copy out manuscripts by hand. You could reproduce them mechanically, hundreds or thousands of it at a time, with relative ease. Now, suddenly, the reading and writing wasn't the purview of the special educated elite class, but it was for the masses. It had broken down the walls. The printing press changed the way we saw the world. In the 19th century, the telegraph made instantaneous communication over vast distances possible. And then Marconi came along with the radio, and we were listening to voices that had been broadcast halfway around the world. And of course, in the 20th century, we had the advent of the television, and we were watching programs that were filmed in a studio hundreds or thousands of miles away and beamed directly into our living rooms. The age of the era of mass communication had arrived. But these mass communication technologies, too, had their limitations. After all, these newspaper printing presses and radio stations and television broadcast networks are enormously expensive to own and operate. Millions of people could read a newspaper or listen to the radio or watch TV, but only a few could send that message. By 1983, just 50 companies controlled 90% of the media that Americans read, saw, or heard on a daily basis. By 2014, that number has shrunk to just 5 corporations. This is the information bottleneck. We have all of this information struggling to reach the masses, but only a thin tube through which to send it. This is why I never heard about Jekyll Island or Operation Northwoods or Edward Bernays. Some guy in a suit in an office hundreds of miles away had decided that I didn't need to know that information. So there I was in my apartment in rural Japan, looking at what I could read in the newspaper and what I could find online, and I was outraged. Chances are you're outraged too. Poll after poll in recent years has shown trust in television and newspaper dropping as internet usage increases. People are discovering what they don't know. But here's the question. What do we do about this? And here's the answer. We use the internet to supplant the media. The internet is the most revolutionary technology since the Gutenberg printing press. Just as Gutenberg made it possible for millions of people to receive a message, now the internet is making it possible for us to send, everyone to send their messages. And now instead of that thin tube, we have a big fat pipe and the information doesn't have to struggle to get in anymore. Well, I mean, this is a significant thing. So what, you're thinking? What does this all mean? This means that for the first time in human history, the average person has just as much of a voice as the wealthiest members of our society. That is significant. But journalism isn't just random tweets on isolated incidents by disconnected bloggers. If we truly want to supplant the old media, we have to start connecting journalists and sources, publishers and audiences, editors and readers in an open source community. Now, new media websites are popping up online that are seeking to solve the problem of how to create a coherent piece of journalism from an open source community. And it is a problem. You have the problem of too much information, too many tweets and Facebook posts and YouTube videos and blogs for anyone to humanly sort through. And there's the problem of bad information. I mean, after all, people lie, people manipulate, people just plain make mistakes. You have to have an editorial process to sort the good information from the bad information and to put it all together into a coherent story. At CorbettReport.com, we too are working on this problem of how to create coherent open source journalism. Our solution for this is a series of open source investigations that we've launched in recent months into such things as the ongoing Ebola outbreak, the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, the rise of the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, and other topics besides. And these reports draw on over 1,000 Corbett Report members from all areas of the globe speaking multiple languages, drawing in articles and videos and interviews and court filings and random documents and all sorts of information, talking about it, vetting it, discussing it, analyzing it, and trying to get it into a coherent narrative. Take, for example, our recent report on the MH17 disaster. That report drew on hundreds of different sources from hundreds of Corbett Report members from all over the world. It included Ukrainian and Russian local media reports, citizen journalists, ordinary citizens, videos, articles, interviews. This was collected, organized, vetted, critiqued, argued about. And then a dozen Corbett Report members took that information and compiled it down into a presentation that I then delivered as a podcast on YouTube and on my website. And that podcast has been viewed nearly 300,000 times on YouTube and another 200,000 times on my website alone. What we've done is assemble a mind-boggling amount of information into a coherent report that has been viewed by nearly 500,000 people. And all of that started from my rundown old apartment building in rural Japan. The information bottleneck has been broken. there's no corporate suit in an office somewhere that's going to tell us anymore what we do or don't need to know. We have reached a stage where we now have the technology to record and receive and publish this information from anywhere in the world at any time. And this technology fits in our pockets. If that is not a revolution, I don't know what is. And it's a revolution that's taking place without swords or guns or bombs. Truly, the net is mightier than the sword.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's theirs? Don't you know you better run, 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 run.
Baby kangaroos have unfortunately lost their mothers to traffic accidents, a sadly common occurrence in Australia. But luckily, volunteers like Sam and Owen are on hand to look after them.
She comes with me to university. Just about everyone in my class has had cuddles with her, especially during exam time. She's a bit of a stress relief. It's just hand her around and she has cuddles.
Their work doesn't just involve looking after the orphans, it has a wider significance.
We go out to schools and we go to markets and fairs and have all the animals there, so people who may generally not come in contact with these animals, we give them that opportunity to, and that way they can see, they can touch and get up and close with these animals, and they build that connection. With the animals, with the environment, and they're able to see the significance of their actions.
If we could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting to a chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting to a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be if we could talk to the animals, learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree.
elephants and eagles, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea. We would converse in polar bear and python, and we would curse in fluent a kangaroo. If people ask us, can you speak rhinoceros? Yeah, we'd say, of course of us. Can't you?
This is the moment an ostrich was caught breaking through a toll gate in China before racing against a truck on the highway. Yep, you heard correctly. The ostrich was found running alongside a truck on the highway in Jinhua City on Monday, disrupting traffic and stunning drivers. The ostrich was 2 meters tall and reportedly weighed 15 kilograms. It was found by traffic police hours later and was pushed towards the highway exit. But as soon as a truck passed by, the ostrich started to run after it, but was soon left behind. Apparently exhausted, it eventually stopped and rested for some time before walking out of the highway. The owner said that the male ostrich was domesticated with a female one in his house and was found missing that morning.
If we confer with our furry friends, man to animal, think of all the things we could discuss. If we could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they could talk to us.
Lying helpless in the road and suffering from its injuries, a distressing sight that would not have been expected. A hippo unable to move because of a broken tooth and leg, with no choice but to wait. Because for hours the hippo was left stranded until rescuers came. The injuries suffered after a fall from a truck as it passed through Myaoli County in Taiwan, although some witnesses reported it being more of a jump, in which the hippo landed on a parked car and then rolled onto the ground. As the time passed, the animal looked visibly more distressed. This passerby wondered what it was and initially thought a dinosaur. After a few hours, the hippo was transported away to a small lake where the local broadcaster said it was receiving medical treatment. But how did the hippo come to be here? It's thought the animal became startled during the drive and then made a break for freedom. Local media claim the hippo was the main attraction at a farm and has already appeared in a soap opera. The animal's owner could face a fine of nearly $3,000 for violating animal protection laws.
Orangutan held in an Argentine zoo can now be freed and transferred to a sanctuary after a court recognised the ape as a non-human person unlawfully deprived of its freedom. Animal rights campaigners filed a habeas corpus petition in November, a document normally used to challenge the legality of a person's imprisonment, all on behalf of Sandra, a 29-year-old orangutan at the zoo. Now, in a landmark case that could pave the way for more lawsuits, the Association of Officials and Lawyers for Animal Rights argued the ape had sufficient cognitive functions and should not be treated as an object. The court agreed Sandra, who was born into captivity in Germany before being transferred to Argentina 2 decades ago, deserved the basic rights of a non-human person. The zoo's chief biologist said he was not surprised by the ruling and that the zoo had plans to move Sandra prior to the decision. He explained staff had been working towards transferring her for more than a year. Orangutan is a word from the Malay and Indonesian languages that means forest man. They are calm, solitary animals which come together only to mate and care for their young. The zoo now has 10 working days to seek an appeal.
We've learned to speak in antelope and turtle. Our Pekingese would be extremely good if we were asked to sing in hippopotamus. Yeah, we'd say Nodamus. And we are sure every octopus, plaice and platypus certainly would see it as a plus if we could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals.
So on this day of July 7, 2012, a prominent international group of cognitive neuroscientists, neuropharmacologists, neurophysiologists, neuroanatomists, and computational neuroscientists gathered here at the University of Cambridge to reassess the neurobiological substrates of conscious experience and related behaviors in human and non-human animals. While comparative research on this topic is naturally hampered by the inability of non-human animals, and often humans, to clearly and readily communicate about their internal states, the following observations can be stated unequivocally.
First observation: the field of consciousness research is rapidly evolving. Abundant new techniques and strategies for human and non-human animal research have been developed. Consequently, more data is becoming readily available, and this calls for a periodic reevaluation of previous held preconceptions in this field. Studies of non-human animals have shown that homologous brain circuits correlated with conscious experience and perception can be selectively facilitated and disrupted to assess whether they are in fact necessary for those experiences. Moreover, in humans, new non-invasive techniques are now readily available to survey the correlates of consciousness. Second observation: the neural substrates of emotions do not appear to be confined to cortical structures. In fact, subcortical neural networks aroused during affective states in humans are also critically important for generating emotional behaviors in animals. Artificial arousal of the same brain regions generates corresponding behavior and feeling states in both humans and non-human animals. Wherever in the brain one evokes instinctual emotional behaviors in non-human animals, many of the ensuing behaviors are consistent with experienced feeling states, including those internal states that are rewarding and punishing. Deep brain stimulation of these systems in humans can also generate similar affective states. Systems associated with affect are concentrated in subcortical regions where neural homologies abound. Young human and non-human animals without neocortices retain these brain-mind functions. Furthermore, neural circuits supporting behavioral electrophysiological states of attentiveness, sleep, and decision-making appear to have arisen in evolution as early as the invertebrate radiation, being evident in insects and cephalopod mollusks, e.g. octopus. Third observation: birds appear to offer in their behavior, neurophysiology, and neuroanatomy a striking case of parallel evolution of consciousness. Evidence of near human-like levels of consciousness has been most dramatically observed in African gray parrots. Mammalian and avian emotional networks and cognitive microcircuitries appear to be far more homologous than previously thought. Moreover, certain species of birds have been found to exhibit neural sleep patterns similar to those of mammals, including REM sleep, as well as was demonstrated in zebra finches, neurophysiological patterns previously thought to require a mammalian neocortex. Magpies in particular have been shown to exhibit striking similarities to humans, great apes, dolphins, and elephants in studies of mirror self-recognition. Final observation. In humans, the effect of certain hallucinogens appears to be associated with a disruption of cortical feed-forward and feedback processing. Pharmacological interventions in non-human animals with compounds known to affect conscious behavior in humans can lead to similar perturbations in behavior in non-human animals. In humans, there is evidence to suggest that awareness is correlated with cortical activity, which does not exclude possible contributions by subcortical or early cortical processing, as in visual awareness. Evidence that human and non-human animal emotional feelings arise from homologous subcortical brain networks provide compelling evidence for evolutionarily shared primal affective qualia.
Finally, we declare the following. The absence of a neocortex does not appear to preclude an organism from experiencing affective states. Convergent evidence indicates that non-human animals have the neuroanatomical, neurochemical, and neurophysiological substrate of consciousness, of conscious states, along with the capacity to exhibit intentional behaviors. Consequently, the weight of evidence indicates that humans are not unique in possessing the neurological substrate that generates consciousness. Non-human animals, including all mammals and birds and many other creatures, including octopuses, also possess these neurological substrates.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Call up the moon for a little consultation. Yes, you know that I'm a happy man, but something in me's burning. Gotta push it out so much frustration. The moon called me back and said, I'll give you some advice. You gotta live a little lighter, gotta breathe a little deeper. Gotta suck it in. There's your medication.
Now, go find the others.com.
You know, we are caught up in this idea that unless you're keeping tabs, unless your numbers are ahead of their numbers or your position or your social caste system is ahead, then you shouldn't be happy. But it's so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you need to happiness? Friends. Hang around with a bunch of friends. Yeah. Have a good time. Do stuff that you like. That's it. Be nice to each other. You'll get more friends.
Yeah.
Be nice to those friends. They'll be loyal to you. You'll be loyal to them, your brothers and sisters. You stay together forever. Everybody's cool. It's all you have to do. You find a gang of friends. You collect friends that are cool, and you enforce your love for them, and they enforce their love for you, and you shield yourself from the outside world by forming these pockets and communities of awesome people. That can be done.